Hello, everyone. Welcome to the fourth episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Raup, Editor-in-Chief.
And I'm Staff Writer Dan Mecca.
We want to thank you all for the support you've given us the last three episodes. We've had a lot of fun doing them. Would you say so?
Yes, I would agree. I would concur on that one. A lot of fun.
Yeah. So, you can always leave comments, you know. Please leave some comments or email us, jpraup@gmail.com, if you have questions or stuff. And or anything you want to talk about to us about the show.
All right, today we're going to do what we usually do. We're going to start off with a little movie news. Then we're going to catch up on some old movies. And then we're going to move along to the main part of the show, which is the movie review, which this week is Jody Hill's Observe and Report, starring Seth Rogen. Take it away, Jordan.
Yes. So, first bit of news. Hollywood Reporter reported.
That's what they do.
They do. They report stuff.
That's because it's in their name.
Yeah. Now, on April 2nd, they announced that Cillian Murphy, Ellen Page, and Marion Cotillard is going to join Christopher Nolan's next film, Inception. They're going to be joining Leo DiCaprio, by the way.
Whoa.
Yes. Now, this film. So it came out that Nolan is not going to be going right to another Batman movie.
Good thing.
Yeah, definitely a good thing. He didn't. I mean, the break between Batman Begins and Dark Knight, where he did Prestige, was great. I love the Prestige.
Yeah, and the Prestige gets better with time.
Yeah. So he's going to move this movie. Now, this script for this film is very, you know, tightly under wraps. I've heard like no one really knows about it.
Yeah. I heard.
All it's about is a science fiction film set within the architecture of the mind. But it already has a release date.
On our website,
July 16th,
by the way. There were rumors that could have something to do with a book called The Architecture of the Mind.
Yeah. I didn't write that, but someone just read the book. I guess it's
was
a recent
book. Was that on Slash Film?
Yeah, Slash Film.
Oh, it was on Slash Film then, yeah.
Yeah, someone read this book, and I guess they talk about this idea of architecture. I don't know what it's about, but...
Yeah, no. It could be interesting. Definitely, yeah. that's the case. But what do you feel about this casting? I mean, it's getting better and better and better.
No, I like it. Yeah, I guess DiCaprio's character is going to play like a CEO type person, while Cotillard will play his wife, and then Paige is a young college grad student and DiCaprio's sidekick.
Yeah, that sounds weird, but.
And then James Franco, I guess, was going to be in the movie, but he had to drop out due to the movie we talked about last week, Your Highness, but. But what do you think, like, just from the character types, what do you think this movie could be about? I mean, Leo plays, like, a CEO type, they said, a businessman, I guess. Do you think he, like, kind of, because it's a sci-fi movie, so I don't know, it's just weird. It seems like it's set in, like, a pretty realistic world for, it's not going to be, like, a Blade Runner, you know, his Blade Runner, you know what I mean?
It could be, it sounds psychological.
It could be, have you seen Following?
Yeah, it could be.
I mean,
like,
he messes
Following.
A lot with, the mind, I guess, there,
Yeah, Following, there's a lot of...
And even Memento, I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean, but that, you know, that... I mean, I guess it could be in the vein of those movies where you have a character who is dealing with some sort of psychological trauma, and it's a narrative story in the sense that it moves along, but it is interrupted and manipulated in different ways by, stylistic camera choices.
Yeah,
or
I was gonna say,
like that.
Do you think there's gonna be like a gimmick in this film, like Memento,
or
do you think it's gonna be more about like a reveal at the end, like the Prestige?
That's a good question. It's really hard to say, because no one knows what this movie's about.
Yeah, I know.
But
just speculation.
But I mean, Inception. That title, Inception. I mean, what does the word Inception mean? You know what I mean? Right. I mean, it's kind of. What does it mean in terms of... look it up. What does it mean?
Yeah, we'll look it up. Let's get the exact definition. Maybe we can...
That's a good idea.
Maybe we can figure out the entire script through
based
it.
Based on
think,
the title. I think that's a good idea.
Let's do it. So,
well,
Inception.
I mean, Following, kind of, you can get the entire movie
that's true.
From the title.
Yeah, it's, and The Dark Knight, you can.
It's about a Dark Knight. Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone knows.
No, okay, now this is pretty. This is a long definition.
Shit.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
According to Merriam-Webster, Inception is an act, process, or instance of beginning. The end.
An act.
An act, process, or instance of beginning.
Oh wow! I am like flabbergasted. I did not know that's what that meant.
So like,
Well, I mean, that's kind of cool, though. I mean, it could be kind of like a psychological birth, you know, rebirth kind of a thing. Like, you know what would be cool, actually? I don't know why I'm thinking about this movie.
Another title is just the beginning of something, such as an undertaking or commencement.
Right.
So maybe, like, Leo has to take on...
Well, see, like, I don't know why I'm thinking about this movie, but what comes to mind is The Conversation, which is the Francis Ford Coppola movie from 74 with Gene Hackman. And,
great movie.
What happens there is Gene Hackman is a sound. He's like a he's a sound guy who,
but like a private detective.
But he's a private detective who works well. He's actually not the sound guy. He's a private detective, and he's got like a sound team.
Yeah.
And they like hear this thing, and it becomes like kind of the linchpin of the whole movie. And like that's kind of the beginning of what becomes almost like the psychological breakdown of Gene Hackman's character and this whole paranoia and stuff. It would be cool if they did something like that, kind of, but in the realm of more espionage with a sci-fi kind of aspect to it. That would be awesome.
I'm really curious.
You know, I would love to see what Nolan can do with that. But who knows? I mean,
I guess Michael Caine said, "This is just a side news story." Just a couple
days. Michael Caine says a lot.
I know, he does. He really does. It's so weird. Like, anytime people want Batman news, they go to Michael Caine.
But how credible is it, though? No. You know, because he said a lot of uncredible things, too. But,
yeah, that's true. No, but he said, because, like, he's like, first he said, oh, this will be the first film that Nolan doesn't, or since, whatever. What was the first film that he was in with Nolan? He was in a Memento.
He was in Batman Begins.
Batman Begins. He was in Insomnia. Yeah, okay. But he said, he's like, I guess Nolan's...
He's been in the last three, though.
Yeah. He's like, I guess Nolan won't use me for this one. But then it came out later that he's actually having a meeting with Nolan. He probably will be in this movie. But
Hey. I love little Michael Caine. Love little
Michael. Oh, by the way, this is a little sidetrack. But
hit me with it. Hit me with it.
I don't know if you saw my tweet today, which you can follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage. But
plug.
But, okay, the movie coming out with Michael Caine.
Is anybody there?
Directed by John Crowley, who did Boy A.
Which
I don't think you saw.
I never saw that.
Which I like. That was on my, like, I do like an ongoing top 20 list, and that was on there for a long time of the year. Like, I really.
That was with who's the kid?
I don't think it was really a well-known.
Yeah, no, it was. Oh, it was Andrew Garfield, who is the college student from Lions for Lambs.
Oh, I never saw that. Yeah, you're right.
An up-and-comer.
But no, that's a good movie. Because that was originally a straight, like, a BBC film that got,
right.
It was going to be a TV movie. Anyway, it's a great movie. So anyways, Michael Caine, Is Anybody There? It comes out this month, so check that out.
Yeah, starring,
that boy from a lot of stuff.
No. The boy from Son of Rambo.
Yeah.
So he's a kid. I don't know. He's not been in too much.
Oh yeah, that's
you know. But he was really good in Summer Rambo. So yeah, I'm excited to see him and Michael Caine in the movie together.
That movie surprised me.
Surprisingly,
that was in my
top 20.
Top 10, top 11, 12.
Yeah, it wasn't in mine, but it was very good.
But yeah, so Michael Caine. I don't know, but you know, he said and then he said something some rumors about the third Batman that it probably won't be till 2011.
Yeah,
so.
He said that. Which I mean, I feel like kind of makes
sense.
I don't
really care. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it till then, but. That and Transformers? That'd be kind of crazy. Yeah. That'd be kind of crazy.
That would be a good name.
But,
All right, so let's move on. All right. On June 5th, Todd Phillips' next film, Hangover, The Hangover, is going to be coming to theaters. But I guess less than two months earlier, it's already announced that Warner Brothers has ordered a sequel for this film. And they want Phillips and writer Scott Armstrong, who also wrote Old School, and then he wrote Semi-Pro and a few other things, to get started on a sequel already. So they even hope to go into production later this year. So I think this was directly a result of some early test screenings, which were like crazy positive. And at Show West, I guess, they showed the trailer, and it got the best response out of anything at the entire...
Well, the trailer's just terrible.
Yeah, it's so funny. Do you want to tell people about this film? 'Cause...
Yeah, The very simple premise of this film is three groomsmen wake up one morning after, two nights in Vegas, and they wake up hungover, hence the title, and all this crazy shit has happened in their room, and they cannot find the groom, whose name I believe is Doug. And there it is. There's your conflict. Yeah.
Ed Helms stars Bradley Cooper, Zach Galifianakis.
Bradley Cooper and Zach Galifianakis, who are kind of three...
It's an odd pairing, but it works.
They're all really funny in their own different ways.
Yeah, they have all the interesting
style. Which could be awesome. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Yeah, and Todd Phillips, he directed Old School, which is very funny. Starsky and Hutch, which I think is very underrated.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it.
I really like Starsky and Hutch, actually. And I feel like, I don't know why, it gets lost.
I've never seen the original, so when people came out, they're like, oh, it's an abomination. Like,
I don't think anyone expected it to the original show.
Yeah, that's what
it was kind of a spoof of the show, though.
Yeah, that's
like, because the show was kind of like not...
Not that serious in itself.
Yeah, like, who takes that show seriously?
I know, so... Well, people did. They didn't like it, so... No, but I liked it, so I'm excited.
Great little comedy that kind of got lost in the shuffle of other, I guess, more successful comedies. But, this is... He hasn't really done much in between in terms of future films.
I don't think so.
So this is a kind of a cool return of form for him. And, you know, the sequel news... The only thing the sequel news really does for me as of right now is makes me excited for the first movie because, I mean, it must be something worth seeing.
If a studio has that much faith in a movie,
right, of course. I mean, like a rated R comedy.
Yeah,
you know, which is nice. Yeah. So, what studio is it? Do you know?
Warner Brothers.
Oh, it is Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay,
they've been hitting out of the park lately.
Well, no, I mean they've been trying to.
Dark Knight. Well, okay.
Watchmen.
But Harry Potter's gonna make.
That's true.
A lot.
Yeah, and they did do Dark Knight. Dark Knight made a shit ton of money. So, yeah.
I mean, not much to say because we don't really know much.
Right.
But okay.
What we got next?
All right. Next two stories actually have to do with the MPAA and some ratings.
Yes. Nice segue.
So Mick G, the director of Terminator Salvation, you know, he's been very
public. And the creator of the OC.
Yeah. Yes.
He's been director of Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Yes. We don't have to mention that, though. No.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do. So he's been very public and open. He's been very open to the public, rather, you know, about his film. When he goes to festivals, he took responses from the crowd, I heard, like 2 months before the movie even came out. Like, I feel like that's cutting it close. He like to see what they wanted in the film. It's kind of weird.
What do you mean?
Like, I remember, I think it was at Comic-Con.
Oh, for Terminator?
Yeah, for Terminator. Oh, it was like really weird. He was like, so what do you guys want to see in this movie? And like, people, you know.
It could have just been an act.
Yeah, no, well, definitely, but...
I mean, it's a good act.
Yeah, so there was this whole thing a couple weeks ago about... There was this topless scene with Moon.
Blue Good?
I always say Blood Gold, because it sounds cool.
Yeah.
But I don't think that is. No, anyway.
Moon Blue Gold, something like that. Yeah.
Moon Blood Good, that's what they said. And she was in What Just Happened.
Oh, she was?
Yeah.
Oh, she was the girl in What Just Happened that like comes on to Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wow,
that's
cool.
So.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Let's see What Just Happened, by the way. Kind of got lost in the shuffle. It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah, but so like people weren't sure, you know, because if this topless scene isn't in, I assume it would get R rating and all the other Terminators have been R. And yeah. But this whole feeling, I always, when, ever since I saw this movie was announced, I had this feeling that it was going to be PG-13.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And so that was confirmed. Pretty much true. Pizza Hut approved.
Pizza Hut says it.
Yeah, no.
I thought, hang on, a quick segue. I thought it was Pasta Hut.
They were going to change it.
They didn't change
it? It must have been a test thing. At least in Europe. They were going to change it to Pasta Hut, then come over.
And then
it sounds better, but they didn't. Yeah. I mean, the pizza right near us closed down, too. Isn't that weird? Did you see that? The one by KFC?
Oh, the Pizza Hut closed down?
Yeah, it closed down.
Or the Pasta Hut.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they tried to do pasta for a day and then failed.
And then
it closed down
miserably.
Anyway,
Pasta Pizza
Hut. There's this website on Pizza Hut, and there's a tie-in with Terminator Salvation, and at the bottom, they have a official MPA rating of PG-13 for the film. So I guess it's PG-13. Don't really care. I'll still see it.
I wasn't expecting it to be R. And then, like, it made me happy when I heard that McGee was trying to defend his R cut. But it seemed to be just for a topless scene, which I was like, well...
Yeah.
But then again, you know, what a lot of bloggers were mentioning is that, you know, PG-13 isn't the kiss of death in terms of cinematic violence.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. If a movie, like, you know...
Case in point, The Dark Knight.
Right, but...
You know, you know, there's been a lot of movies that have come out recently with violence, you know, that PG-13 is... I mean, you don't need to see a Terminator ripping off someone's head.
Yeah.
If they can
that's
do
sometimes
it where,
that's about what you don't show.
So. Yeah, no, I mean, exactly.
You know, I mean, I don't know if McG will have
you know,
that
like, for example, Funny Games.
Yeah.
Do you remember Funny Games?
Yeah.
You know, I actually really didn't like that movie, but there's next to no violence on screen in that film. And, you know, I mean, it's rated R, so it's a different point. But the point is, it's a very kind of a flinching movie, but, you know, you really don't see anything.
Actually, this really cool thing I heard, South by Southwest Movie Festival. I was listening to the Totally Rad show, and they did a video review of a bunch of movies. One movie, The Horseman. Have you heard of it?
Vaguely.
Yeah. So this movie, I was just listening to them. It's crazy. They say it's the most disturbing, hands down, the most disturbing film, like the three hosts I've ever seen. And I mean, I assume they've seen a lot of films. But they said they don't show anything, though. They show almost everything. And, it's just what they don't show is what's, fucked up. And
What is it about?
I just know it's about I don't know. They were talking more about the acts of violence in the film. That's what I took away from it.
Or what?
No, I looked online. As soon as they talked about it, I looked online, but they said it's just ultra violent, or ultra terrifying, but through not the, they don't show the violence. But so I just thought that's a movie to check out eventually.
Interesting.
But
interesting.
It sounded really interesting. Yeah.
But I mean, how do you, I know that I'm more excited to see Terminator than you are.
I'll still see it. No, but
I'm just saying in terms of the summer movies coming out, that's the movie I'm most excited for.
Oh, really?
It's Terminator. Yeah.
More than Up, Public Enemies?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm as excited to see Terminator as I am to see Public Enemies and
I guess
and
I'm actually more excited Terminator.
But my explanation being when I saw, the first Terminator and the second Terminator and even the third Terminator, the entire time you watch these movies, they always reference the war that caused all of the turmoil that these Terminators are coming back in time to try to subvert or change. Yeah. And so when you watch these Terminator movies, I always think to myself throughout all those three movies, I wonder what that war is like.
Yeah.
And now with the fourth movie, and people are saying, why do we need a fourth Terminator movie? And that's totally understandable. But in my mind, the reason we need it is because we're finally going to get to see the war that Cameron and the guy who directed the third one, whoever he was, we're referencing to.
I guess what else we're going to get to see?
Throughout two. What?
Can I get a Schwarzenegger?
Yeah,
confirmed today, yeah.
Confirmed?
He's in the movie.
He's making a cam?
Making a little cameo? Yeah.
Yeah, Arnie.
Hell yeah.
Oh, he's the guy. And I guess
Expendables too. Don't quote me on that, but I think I saw a news story where he was confirmed.
He has that time, huh? He's as the governor of California, he has that kind of time.
For the Terminator, come on. He's like that. He is the Terminator.
Good
okay.
for him.
All right, let's move on. All right. Next.
Another MPA rating.
Yeah, another MPA rating. So, Harold Ramis's next comedy, Year One, went up for a second ratings appeal from the MPA, and it failed, and it's still an R-rated movie.
They're trying to cut it down, and
it's for sexual content and language.
Wow.
Which is, Judd Apatow produced this. It stars Jack Black and Michael Cera, and it's been given R-rated for sexual content and language. They have an option for resubmitting a further edited version, but for now, Sony's going to have to accept it, the rating.
Sony's not been doing well lately, so.
Yeah, and I guess it cost $75 million to make.
Really?
Yep, do those sets. Yikes. Expensive.
How do you think it's going to do?
I think it's going to not do good.
You don't think it's going to do well?
I'm personally excited for it. A lot of people didn't like the trailer. I guess the Super Bowl ad was the lowest rated in the polls, even worse than Angels and Demons. Why?
Well, Angels and Demons is a good trailer.
All right. It was.
I mean, I'm not excited to see it per se because I don't know. I just don't know how, even if you make the movie more exciting, I don't know how, you make Tom Hanks' character more interesting.
Exactly.
I mean, but I guess Ewan McGregor's a good addition.
Yeah.
But that's another
Year One.
Year One, I thought the trailer was pretty funny.
Yeah, me too.
I'm excited because I know there'll be a lot of cameos in it. You have the Paul Rudd, David Cross thing. They play Cain and Abel. And I have always liked Jack Black. He's one of the more, I think, polarizing comedians or actors out there. I think I talked to about as much people who love him as hate him.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, did you like, for example, School Rock?
Yeah.
I did. A lot of people hate that movie because it's just Jack Black doing his thing.
Really, I thought
that was. I mean, it was a successful movie, but I'm saying retroactively, people go back and I think just because Jack Black continues to go on.
Lately, I haven't liked him. Be Kind, Rewind was my single biggest disappointment.
Right. Well, that was a rough movie. I don't know if that was his fault. That was. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault.
But I mean, Tropic Thunder, though.
Oh, dude, I forgot. Great.
Tropic Thunder, but I thought he was the least funny part of.
I mean, the one monologue that when he's tied to the tree is hilarious.
Well, yeah, I would literally suck. Yeah, that whole thing. That was actually hysterical.
But, and dude, I loved his voice. The beginning, when you first hear him and you hear that voice. And
the really harsh New York voice. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I love
Anyways,
that.
Anyways, Kung Fu Panda, I cannot get into that. But it's good. But
I don't know why. It's not like, yeah. I know. It's a light little, cute little movie. It's not nothing wrong.
I just get bored. Sorry.
Whatever.
Anyways, okay. So yeah, if it's R-rated, I guess it'll hurt the box office. But these R-rated comedies have been doing good no matter what.
See, I don't know that that'll help it. That like news got out that like blatantly trying to cut it down for PG-13. It like makes it look to people who, I don't know. Like, it makes it look like it's a movie that's like, you know, trying like way too studio or something. You know what I mean?
But for a movie like this, I feel like their audience aren't people that are probably going to read this news story. Like,
yeah,
they
I mean,
know.
You think it's going to be more like 15-year-old kids? Oh, let's go see Year One. You know, like as opposed to people like kids our age, like 21-year-olds are going to go see The Hangover.
Yeah.
I mean, you think that like no, tweens are going to go see Year One kind of a thing?
I think if it was PG-13, it would get a larger audience. It doesn't feel like an R-rated film to me.
Yeah. I agree with you. It doesn't. Right. I'm surprised that, like they even had stuff in there that was R, but like.
But I guess because
what I'm saying is, I feel like they're isolating a large dynamic of their audience mm-hmm. by kind of blatantly. I mean, now it's obvious that like they want a PG-13 movie.
Which makes it
seem like they're trying to appeal to like. You know, the stupid young crowd or something. Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, you have people on, you know, blogs and stuff like this, you know, who get really into their movies, you know, us included, and might get, like, turned off by this kind of news story. That's what I'm saying.
I just feel like that the audience you're talking about isn't big enough to have a big effect.
No, and you're probably right. You're probably right. It's probably smarter for them to get a PG-13 so that younger kids go see it and laugh, you know, because... All right.
Next story. Actually, before we talk about this next story,
yeah,
I gotta tell. I didn't post this on our site because it wasn't really big news. I guess it was. All right. So two nights ago, Austin, Texas, at the Alamo Draft House. Do you know what happened?
No, I don't.
Really? All right. So there was a screening of Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan. Did you hear anything about this?
No, I haven't heard anything.
Dude, I'm serious. Oh my god! Okay,
I'm like really excited now.
Okay, this is awesome. All right, so all these Trekkies are in one little place. Have you heard of the Alamo Draft House? By the way, need to go to that theater before I die. Like, it's awesome.
See, I haven't heard about it enough to like, say something like that.
They have like you get beer and like it's like really relaxed atmosphere and like it's just awesome. Anyways, okay, so this happened, you know, 2 nights ago.
Okay, 2 nights. So wait. Let's just let people know this. We're recording this on Wednesday, so this happened on Monday.
Yes.
Okay, so it happened on Monday night.
Yep, Monday night. All right, so Wrath of Khan, it was just like a special screening. They are also going to show, you know, 10 minutes of the
Wrath of Khan, which is the second Star Trek movie.
Beats me. I know nothing about Star Trek.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. I'm not a Trekkie fan. But anyways.
Yeah, Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. So Alamo Draft House, Austin, Texas, Monday night.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay. So they show Wrath of Khan, then they were going to go show 10 minutes of the new Star Trek afterwards.
Got it.
So they get 5 minutes. I think it was about 5 minutes into Wrath of Khan. The film burns up on the screen. You know, like it burns out. I don't know if it was an effect or something. Guess who walks out on stage?
J.J. Abrams.
No. Leonard Nimoy.
Get the fuck out.
With a film canister in his hand of the new Star Trek.
No!
He goes, do you guys want to see the new Star Trek film? And you know the response was wild, and you know he put it on and they showed they premiered. He was like, because Australia, the big news was Australia was going to get the premiere. You know how the times on Australia it would work out to be like Tuesday morning that they would be seeing it first.
Right.
So they premiered it in Austin first. Surprise! Awesome. Surprise screening. And
so patriotic of them.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
what did the Trekkies think?
Loved it. Like loved. It.
Really?
Yeah. Like mind blown. That's what okay. That was a huge controversy because then there was all these news articles that came out the next day that was like, it's such a surprise that Trekkies who were gonna go to a theater to watch Wrath of Khan loved the new Star Trek. Like they thought, you know, they were like, the people thought like, let's wait to, you know, media critics and normal people see the film.
Oh, like they're saying like
they would be excited no matter what. Big surprise. Like imagine that happened to us. Like that would. I'm not even a track, I would go crazy.
Yeah, but I mean,
because I think the new J.J. Abrams films look awesome. Abrams film,
right? Right. Okay, but anyways, okay. Yeah, okay.
So. But then reviews came out for the Australia premiere and with Trekkies, non-Trekkies, media critics like, and it was all overwhelmingly positive as well. So
awesome.
One quote was I think for showing had a guy that went like that gave him a review and they said like he'd be surprised if there was a better summer movie to come out.
Wow.
So this year. So he said it's just really fast paced. Like, just, and they said the acting was, because that was a lot of people worried about because, these young actors are just completely taking the roles of these, people that are iconic and they were just scared. But I guess, across the board it was fine. So.
Right. Oh, hey, I'm excited to see it. I mean, I'm really excited to see this film.
I cannot wait. And you're going to miss out. Wow, Dan.
I will not be in this country. I will not be in this country when the movie comes out. But I mean, it should. Won't it be out in Europe?
Yeah, it will be.
So I can see it in London or something.
Yeah. It hits theaters May 8th, and they're doing this kind of cool thing. It's like a world tour of the movie. Before they're not releasing it in the markets, but they're showing screenings throughout the world before this whole month. Maybe upcoming
dub version in like France.
Yeah, something like that. But
be sick.
Yeah. Okay, so that would be confusing. Do you think?
Confusing or awesome?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. So May 8th comes to the U.S. theaters.
May 8th?
Okay. May 8th, 2009.
May 8th, okay.
Yeah, because Wolverine's the week before.
Wolverine, yes it May is. May 1st. Yes it is.
Which, by the way, and let's not talk about it too much, but Jackman responded to the leak, and he's heartbroken, that's what he said. So
sad.
That's it, yeah. Okay. But anyways, let's not talk about the leak.
Okay.
Anyways, new story came out this morning. Gore Verbinski, director of the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy.
And The Weatherman.
and some other films.
Yes.
All right. He's not going to do the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean film, which was scheduled to be released in 2010. Yeah, thank God. So he said, I had a fantastic time bringing Pirates to life, and I'm eternally grateful to Jerry, Johnny, and the rest of the creative and production team. I'm looking forward to all of us crossing paths again in the future. So it looks like that relationship, obviously, it's not like they were, like, dying for him to do the film, and, it's not, like, a hurt relationship. And, like, it sounds like they're going to keep
going. Are they still going to do it?
Yeah, I assume so.
Oh, they're still going to do Pirates?
Yeah. I think they're looking for another director now, which will be interesting. Like, what if they get someone really...
I mean, is Johnny Depp going to be in it still?
Yeah.
Why is he doing that?
I don't know.
Why can't Johnny Depp just let it be?
Yeah.
You had your Jack Sparrow, move on, play John Dillinger, do that stuff.
Probably because it made an ungodly amount of money. I think that's...
Yeah, but how... I mean, like, does he need any more money? Like,
I know. Well, no, I mean, studio-wise, like...
No. I get the studio thing, but I feel like... Isn't Johnny Depp badass enough to just be like, fuck that.
I mean, I feel like Public Enemies make a lot of money. Like, it's not like he has a future head where he's just going to do these independent films, like,
I know, but,
Tim Burton, I'll probably hook up with again, do something.
Well, he already did, I mean...
Yeah, that's true.
And Nelson Wonderland.
Yeah, wow.
So, I mean, that's coming up. But, I mean, all right, anyway.
Okay, so the film he's doing instead of Pirates 4
is cool.
BioShock. Right. Now, this was a 2007 video game, which...
I don't play video games, and I thought this was really cool.
Yeah, like, I don't think I've played a video game in a couple months, but, like, this film... And I really like multiplayer games. I don't really play single player too much. But this film, this story, and this... this story in this video game is just, like... Just astonishing how beautiful it's told and how
what's the story?
How immersive it grabs you. There's this underwater facility world, I guess you could say, and it's just kind of a apocalyptic underwater type of thing. But it's set I think in the 50s though. It's like a different time.
It's like an alternative history.
Yeah, I don't call me on that because it's been 2 years since I played it as soon as it came out and finished it within a couple.
A couple days.
So, but I loved it, and just the characters are really, everything that's in this video game, I could see being in a movie, like very cinematic. And I hope they don't take any liberties.
Well, they still need to make a good adaptation of a video game.
I know
they have yet to, right? They have yet to.
No, I have yet to.
There's not been one.
There's been fun ones. Like I enjoyed the first Resident Evil. I enjoyed.
Yeah, I actually never even saw that.
Yeah.
But I mean, like all the ones I've seen have been rough.
Yeah.
I played Max Payne.
Oh my god!
And like, that was the laziest movie I've ever seen. That's the only way to describe Max Payne.
That movie.
It was such a lazy movie. Yeah. She's like, let's just make it and then release it. Like, yeah. Oh, it was so bad.
Yeah.
It was almost, anyway.
Yeah, anyway, so
Bioshock. Hopefully Bioshock is, you know.
Yeah. Success. It was supposed to come out in 2011, but I think it'll get pushed back again. So we'll look forward to that in a couple years.
Definitely. And, you know, hopefully Gore Verbinski, he's pretty good at the big epics.
Yeah.
So
there's some sequences in the Pirates films that I enjoyed.
I mean, the second one, the sword fight sequence on the...
I really enjoyed the second one. I know a lot of people
I actually like the third one a little bit more than the second one, which I know is most people actually think opposite. But the sword fight scene in the second one on the spinning wheels.
Yes, yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. That was an awesome, as they were going down to the awesome cliff, scene. Right? Yeah, like, that was incredible. And most of the first one is great.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if they're going to create bigger action epic scenes from, for Bioshock, you know? Because, like, I wonder if they're just going to expand. Because there's some scenes, but they're not... No, I guess there are some good scenes, but nothing that I could think of that's Pirates, epic. Like, you know?
But, I mean, it's like an Alien kind of a story.
Yeah. There's
Alien the movie. You know, that kind of, like, stuck, you know, like, stuck trapped and alone kind of a thing going on. But,
Yeah, but anyways,
all right.
Let's move on.
So what are we going to talk about now? Old movies?
Yeah, old movies.
What do you got, Jordan?
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
All right, so before we talk about old movies, Dan and our friend John Rannick saw Adventureland last week and at a private screening and talked about it. And I just want to say I did see it on Friday after the podcast was recorded, and I absolutely loved it. I think it's my favorite film of the year. I really urge everyone to go see it. It's just sweet and... Yeah, great movie. I love the characters. There's just like all these special little moments. I know it sounds a little, but it's true.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Like, no, it's well written.
Yeah, and
really well acted. A lot of up and comers.
Yeah, go totally. See it. But we already reviewed it, so let's move on. Okay, so after Adventureland, came back, and I watched Tell No One. This is a French film. It actually was made a while ago, but it was actually released in France a while ago, but 2006, I think. But it just got a release here in America. And
it's based on a popular novel by Harlan Coben, who,
yes.
He's a bestseller. He's kind of like a high profile writer. He writes thrillers and stuff like that, which is what initially turned me off of this movie, because I was kind of like, oh, is it just like, you know, like a John Grisham kind of a adaptation? Yeah. But apparently,
yeah, this movie, okay. Right? Yeah, no, this movie it completely blew me away. Gotta say it. No, it I was exhausted. I was like about to fall asleep. I was like, let's just put on a movie. I put on this movie, and I was literally wide awake the entire time. There's in this film, short story of it, a pediatrician, Alexandra Beck, his wife, Margaret Beck, gets killed in the first 5 minutes. And then mysteriously, 8 years later, he gets an email of a video of her. So the story, it's kind of follows him around. I think he's pretty much in every scene, and it follows him around France and trying to figure out what exactly is going on. And you uncover some there's a lot of twists, you know, a lot of just there's some parts where you will be confused, but there's always
how long is it?
I think it's over 2 hours.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, definitely. And there's just some fantastic shots and fantastic scenes. There's a foot chase scene towards the middle of the film, and it's seriously one of the best, foot chases since the Bourne movies that I've seen. Like, there's a scene, I mean, I won't spoil too much, there's a scene where he has to cross the road and like 10 lines of traffic, and the way they shoot it, the way it ends up is like just awesome.
Yeah, I really got to see it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend anyone watching it. The actor, it was actually kind of funny. The actor, Francois Clouzet, he looks exactly like a taller Dustin Hoffman. It's like the weirdest thing. The whole time I was thinking of Dustin Hoffman.
Really?
Yeah, it's so weird.
That's strange.
It's like, it was really strange.
I can't imagine a taller Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, but no, the acting was good across the board. I know. The acting, you know, is good across the board. No, I definitely recommend anyone to see it. It's on DVD as of last week, and it's also on Netflix. Watch instantly. So just pop it in. Great subtitles. It's not dubbed or anything. Yeah, I don't really want to say too much because the whole movie is about kind of reveals throughout the film.
All right.
And yeah.
Sounds good. You'll have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So Dan, what movie did you watch?
I actually, I think on Monday night, I watched In the Company of Men finally, which in the name of the movie was In the Company of Men, and I finally watched it. And it was written and directed by Neil LaBute, who is a playwright who actually just came out with a...
I had no idea that's who directed it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I gotta watch this.
Yeah, no.
I did not see this film, by the way.
First movies, Aaron Eckhart, who he was friends with from Brigham Young, I believe. They were both Mormons. I read an article about Neil LaBute in the New York Times Magazine. It was actually pretty interesting. Check it out if you can. He just came out with it. He has a new play on Broadway right now. His first Broadway play. Playing at the Lyceum Theater. And the name of it is Reasons to be Pretty. I think Piper Perabo's in it. She was lead in Coyote Ugly, if you don't know who that is. She's actually a pretty good actress. So don't take that comment and run away with it. Anyway, In the Company of Men, Aaron Eckhart, among other, a lot of other players. Very kind of a normally directed movie. There's a lot of long shots. It's really a lot more about the writing. It's pretty much, the premise of the movie is two men who work in some sort of marketing firm or what have you. They have this long conversation in which they describe how they're frustrated with women, and they decide to take it out on the next person they find who's like of a caliber, and the next woman they find. And Aaron Eckhart finds a woman who is deaf, and himself and his friend decide to both try to court her and then like totally break her down by making her feel things for them and faking like every emotion that they have. And things fall apart, as they do in most of Neil LaBute's plays and movies.
Especially in the Wicker Man. That really fell apart.
The Wicker Man actually fall apart, I feel like, on the set it fell apart. It's one of the worst movies ever made. And he wrote and directed that, actually.
One thing. Really disappointing. Yeah. You know what he's doing? What is the next film he's directing?
I think I knew, but tell me.
Death at a Funeral.
Is he really?
Yeah, that's what it said. Pre-production.
He's directing the remake
of
the great Frank Oz movie, yeah. Death at a Funeral.
Yeah, which we saw in theaters, right?
In British.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a British movie. In English. It's not like you need to... it's like there weren't subtitles anyway. It was just an accent, but anyway. Anyway. That's good.
No, it's
well, I mean, he's really good at remakes. You know, The Wicker Man was one of the worst films ever made. I'll never forget. Forget.
How did it get burned?
Actually, John Rannick, who guest starred last episode, he texted me about an hour ago, 17 How to Get Burns in a row in a text. So that was awesome. And
hey, at least he made that film. And John, you're listening. That joke will never die.
Fuck you. And that was awesome. Yeah, but this movie, In the Company of Men, really good. My biggest problem with the film, and like I'd totally recommend it, is there seems to be not too much in it. There's a lot of really interesting dialogue set pieces, if that makes any sense. Like, there's Aaron Eckhart in the beginning, he muses on a lot of different things that men especially will be able to relate to in kind of a really primal way. But what happens is these characters, all, you know, these two men in two different ways really show the worst sides of themselves. And the thing that the movie does really well is it kind of manufactures hope for its characters, you know, through the viewer. And, you know, in some respects, it's all set up or not. It's kind of for you to choose. I mean, there's definitely things that you're not going to be able to decide on. It's just a tough movie to watch because it kind of shows how easy it is for people to turn so vicious without maybe even being aware. And also how naive people can be when you push the right buttons. But yeah, like a really well written, you know, just like LeBoult is really a great writer, kind of still coming to his own as a director. He really hasn't kind of, I feel like, really kind of found his visual eye or whatever. And this is clear with this movie because it's one of his first, might have been his first directing effort. But really great performances. Aaron Eckhart pre-Harvey Dent, so that's always fun to see. And he plays a total douchebag. Yeah, I recommend really anything this guy has done that's not The Wicker Man. Nurse Betty is a great film. Very, very funny. He wrote and directed that. The Shape of Things he adapted his play, The Shape of Things, into a film, which he directed as well. That starred Paul Rudd and Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, I got to see that.
That's a great...
Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's a great movie. I actually, not to mention, I have not seen the very end of the movie, I've seen the play, though. And so I know how it ends, but I really got to see the end of the film. But, I mean, that's like a movie where Paul Rudd kind of is not just the guy that you know of him as now, which is like just another Apatow funny man.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm not downplaying that, but he is also a serious actor, and this is a movie that really kind of shows that. But, yeah, in The Company of Men, very good indie, needs work visually. Very well written, very well acted. Check it out if you get a chance. You probably won't want to watch it for a long time after you see it, but it's definitely something that'll touch on instincts that you don't want to think about.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all I got. All
right. So next movie we're going to talk about just a little bit. Dan and I both take a film class.
Yeah, we did both take a film class. What film class is that, Jordan?
World Cinema.
Sounds sophisticated.
And we've watched some interesting films, and we talked about, you know, the three color
films.
Yeah, Blue, part of the three color trilogy. We talked about that in this class before. We watched Rashomon, which was my first time watching it, which was
right,
great.
Too.
Yeah, and
didn't let us down.
No, just Old Boy, which was awesome. Love seeing that film again. Anyways, this film we watched this week was Naked Lunch, David Cronenberg's 1991, William S. Burroughs adaptation. I had to write a paper and do a presentation on it, and this is a very, you know, odd film, like one would expect from a Cronenberg film. The plot itself is, I mean, basically it's about an exterminator who accidentally murders his wife and then becomes involved in, like, a secret government plot and goes to a different country.
He goes to a place called Interzone.
Interzone, yeah.
Which looks a lot like Tangier.
Yeah, and... It's a film where, you know, it's more for the experience, I would say, than to, like, try to figure out everything that's going on.
But yeah, I mean, you said what it was based on, right?
Yeah, well, Naked, you want to talk about Naked Lunch?
It's based on the book Naked Lunch, written by William Burroughs. And for those who don't know, William Burroughs was one of the Beat Generation writers. He's kind of infamous for his lifestyle, which was, you know, he was a junkie for... pretty much all of his life. He only recently died about a little over 10 years ago. He was, you know, a very sexually promiscuous in terms of, you know, had sex with guys, girls, whatever.
Yeah.
He wrote many books. The first book he had published was called Junkie, and he published it under the name William Lee, which is the name of the main character in this film, Naked Lunch. Naked Lunch was the first book he published as William Burroughs, and this movie... He also did a movie called Queer, which didn't get published until later, but that was his second book that he technically wrote. Naked Lunch is more, the movie is more about the making of the book, the writing of the book, and not so much the contents of the book, which, what'd you say, Jordan? Cronenberg said, had they tried to adapt what was in Naked Lunch,
to do a direct adaptation, he said it would cost upwards of $500 million. And be banned in every single country in the world. So,
which, if that doesn't want to make you read this book, then I don't know what will ever.
Yeah, but no, the film itself, you know, this is one of those films that you're watching, you may, you know, not really like what's going on, but definitely after you watch it, I feel like.
I mean, it's 110% psychoanalytical. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of Freud and shit like that. I mean, insects play a big part. I mean, obviously, he's an exterminator. So there's like a Kafka kind of a thing going on.
But even more than that, they
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the beginning. And then, you know, I think the exterminator job is because Burroughs himself was actually an exterminator for a while. Yep. Burroughs hated bugs, which Jordan said in class today.
Yeah, and Cronenberg absolutely loves bugs.
And Cronenberg loves bugs. And a famous quote that Burroughs was known for saying to his fellow B writers, Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac, was exterminate all rational thought, which he kind of did in his own life in the sense that he was never sober. And always on some sort of drug. And this movie really kind of feeds into that and really kind of delves into the writing process. And there's just a lot going on. It's probably impossible to decipher all of it. But really well made. Cronenberg at his weirdest.
Yes.
Peter Weller plays William Lee. And for those who don't know, Peter Weller is RoboCop. Which, that's kind of cool to see him out of his element, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't know, great movie.
Yeah.
I thought I kind of got more and more into it as it went on, and the ending does not disappoint.
No.
Two words, Roy Schneider.
Schneider? There's no N.
That's E-R. Schneider. Roy Schneider.
But yeah.
My apologies to him.
Stewart. All right.
Yeah. Great.
All right. You want to, go see the movie. And by go see it, I mean rent it.
Or read the book.
Or read the book. No, actually, no, definitely. It's a good accompaniment. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't need to read one before the other.
At least do some research about it. If you watch the film and then you're like, oh, well, that sucked. But
do research for the film before or after you see it. But the point is, it'll be a richer film experience whenever you find out about Burroughs because he had a very rich life himself. Yeah. But, all right, you want to move on to this this review?
All right. Our feature film review.
Yeah, this is the main segment of our show where we review a new movie that is coming out.
This movie hits theaters Friday. It is
just today.
Right.
For those who are listening.
Yeah. This movie is Observe and Report. It is Jody Hill's kind of bigger budget effort after The Foot Fist Way.
Second feature.
Yes. And, this film stars Seth Rogen as a Ronnie Barnhart. He's a bipolar mall security guard. And, the basic premise is there's a flasher that comes to the mall. And what you see in the opening scene? Yeah, the opening scene. And he comes to the mall and he kind of flashes as he would, people in the mall. And the film kind of follows that whole storyline and Barnhart, Seth Rogen's character, he's kind of a loser and he's trying to achieve.
Kind of a loser?
He is a loser.
He's a huge loser.
A massive loser.
Huge, massive loser.
Yeah. Massive loser. Much like Kenny Powers in Eastbound and Down.
Yeah, that's weird.
Which is weird because Jody Hill has a huge part in that
series. Oh my god, that's so
strange. And kind of like Kenny Powers, kind of like Foot Fist Way.
Kind of like Danny McBride's character in The Foot Fist Way. Yeah. Oh.
Anyways, so pretty much, the film is about Barnhart, kind of showing his life as a mall cop, and people that enter his life are in his life. Ray Liotta plays a detective that kind of he goes head to head with Rogan on trying to solve this. Anna Faris plays his love interest. She's a beautician at the mall. Now, first reactions. Dan and I have quite a different view on this film. Like, I'm sure a lot of people will have. Yeah,
that's the way it looks like in Rotten Tomatoes right now. It's like 50%.
And people I've talked to online.
Very polarizing.
Yeah. So, you wanna say what you think first? Yeah,
how do you feel about it, Jordan? No, you go ahead.
Okay. Now, this film. The beginning of the film, I was a little worried because it starts off... I know Dan's going to disagree. It starts off, a little normal. I was waiting for, a lot more jokes. And then as the film ramps up, it gets very unrealistic, which some people may not like.
Yeah.
And it gets disturbing. disturbingly unrealistic.
And just disturbing.
And disturbing.
Just disturbing.
And so the realistic tone of the beginning of the film completely changes, and I think we should probably talk about spoilers later, but parts I want to talk about. Definitely. But this film, like, I don't know how it got made at all. I don't know how a production company read the screenplay
and then let Jodie Hill and Seth Rogen go ahead. Seth Rogen just must be one of the most bankable people in the world right now.
Yeah.
To get this movie made.
Which is great after Zach and Mary kind of didn't do so great.
This was
in production before. And so,
right.
So,
I mean, yeah, it must have just been.
But,
right.
Coming out of this film, I liked it. I liked it a lot. But with that said, I love Eastbound and Down, and I loved Flip This Way, so I kind of knew what I was expecting. And since I'm kind of glad we didn't do this podcast last night as we were going to, because throughout the day I've been thinking about the film and I like it even more. And Dan shaking his head, and I like it even more now. And actually, I'm really looking forward to see it again.
That is so weird that you said that, Jordan, because I'm glad that we didn't do the podcast last night, because I've been thinking about this film today. And I dislike it so much more than I disliked it last night. And I didn't even like it last night. So it's so strange that's the way it happened. This is a movie that's really it's a mean movie. You know, it's mean spirited. It's like a very dark black comedy. You know, there's like a lot of swearing, which is fine, and like a whole lot of whatever, sex and stuff like that, which is all good, all well and good. The rated R comedy is back, and it's better than ever. Amen to that. But this thing is a fucking waste of time for the most part. When I laughed, I laughed really hard. There's some really, really, really funny parts, okay? But the movie's all over the place. It's like poorly made. I didn't like a lot of, like, it was, the way it's edited is sloppy. And the thing about the movie is it's not funny enough for how mean it is. I didn't, like, instead of laughing, for every time that I laughed, I was put off by other scenes twice. So I laughed once, and then I was totally disgusted by two other scenes twice. And that's why I don't like the movie, because by the end of it, I was rolling my eyes and just kind of like, geez, like, enough already. Like, it was like getting bashed in the head with a guitar or something, you know, like, and then finally I was just like, no. But like I said, when it hits, it hits hard.
Yeah.
So, and it's really funny, but not for the most part.
All right, Dan, I have to agree with you on some points. I do agree. There's some really odd editing choices in this film. There's parts where it will
odd or just lazy, or is it just lazy? Because it felt lazy. I mean, there's scenes like, for example, transition scenes that are just like, I mean, I get it. I get the whole awkward, you know, the whole like off-center feel of this whole film. I get that, right? Yeah. They're like trying to, and they've succeeded in establishing a whole new branch of comedy. You know, like now you have a Judd Apatow comedy, a Will Ferrell comedy, an Adam Sandler comedy, and a Jodie Hill comedy. You know, like these are like, you know, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. You can see that if you want to. Step Brothers, you know, Knocked Up, or now Observe and Report, The Foot This Way. Okay, yeah, like that's awesome.
Yeah, do not expect anything that Seth Rogen, like as you know him before. Like, don't expect any.
No, nothing.
No, it's not even Kevin Smith. It's not even like Zach Amir. It's not like funny people. I mean, it's not like
there's nothing sentimental about this film.
No.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing about this movie. It's so uneven. There's nothing sentimental about it. I didn't care about any of the characters at all. Like, I didn't give a shit about anybody in this movie. Now, I don't think that's the point to care about anybody in the movie, because everyone's so over the top and, like, immoral and kind of totally unredeeming that I don't feel like Jodie Hill was even going for that. But then why are there these super, super serious scenes out of nowhere that are just kind of off, that are just kind of thrown away with one quick punchline, which may be a funny punchline, but is it worth 5 minutes of like,
I would say,
mind-numbing seriousness?
There was about two of those conversations, or two of those scenes that I would agree are kind of lie dead. But there's some that I want to talk about spoilers so bad. But
well, I mean, for right now we can be just vague about it. I mean, like for example, like this is one of the scenes, and I know people have been talking about this. Okay, and like I'm gonna agree with the people who were turned off by this. Mm. There's a scene, and like, this isn't really a spoiler. If you saw the Red Band trailer, you know that something along these lines is going to happen. Seth Rogen's character takes Anna Faris's character out, and they go drink at a bar. Anna Faris gets really, 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 really drunk.
Takes pills. And then takes
it like a whole bunch of pills that Seth. Oh yeah, antidepressants because they're Seth Rogen's pills. And it cuts to her throwing up, and then him kissing her. Whatever, that's gross, but it's fine. You know, people laugh. I didn't laugh, but it was funny, I guess. And then for some people, and then it cuts after that disgusting scene that is not funny in my mind. It cuts to Seth Rogen having sex with her while she is sleeping, having sex with a girl who is too drunk to know what she's doing while she is sleeping. Okay, really? Is that funny? I don't think it's funny.
It's funny like, in the sense that his character the whole time he's so like desperate and like just so just
that he rapes a girl though.
Yeah,
like that's rape.
Maybe I'm sadistic but like her head's turned. There's puke all over her pillow, and he's just going
there's
at her,
puke on
and
the
it's
pillow.
Just
right.
it's just so right. sad and fucked up that it just.
That
I
is,
just
exactly.
Like, it's
His whole
so,
movie is sad and fucked up.
I know, but that is why it's so funny.
And either you laugh at it or you don't laugh at it. Okay, that's the thing about this movie. It is so motherfucking pathetic. Everything that happens in this movie is so sad and
demented.
And
I'm looking back and I'm just laughing my ass off, like
I know.
Thinking about it. And I know you're not.
And even I know. I laughed a couple times right there. I don't know if you heard. And that's what I'm saying. I did laugh at some parts because I do like Eastbound and Down. I did think The Foot Fist Way was pretty funny, okay? Yeah. But this is 40 times meaner than anything I saw from what I saw of both of those things, I thought. And there are scenes in this film that are terrifyingly offensive. Like, and I'm just like, I get it. You're trying to break the norm.
Yeah.
I got it. And listen, there are some really well-made parts, you know, for all my badgering about the editing and stuff. There are some really well-edited scenes. There's a fight scene in the middle that's really well done, actually. I was very impressed. And with comedies, it's less about how they're made than about what you know, the content of the writing and the acting and stuff. Okay.
Do you want to talk about a few more things and talk about spoilers?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, a couple parts of this film before you go into spoilers. I think Jodie Hill does a great job of picking music. Would you say the soundtrack? I've been playing it through my head seriously the whole day. Like I need to get this soundtrack.
Yeah, I don't need to get it, but I mean, it was fine.
Yeah.
What was the music? It was like. Rock.
Yeah, there's you know, classic.
You know, there's like a lot of slow motion in it.
Yeah.
I liked I Love You Man so much more, you know, in terms of comedies. You know, like just thinking about recent comedies. You know, like that's what I think. You know, I liked the Apatow comedies more. Yeah. I just, you know, like listen, I mean, I see why people will love this film. You know, like I see why Will Ferrell and Adam McKay love The Foot Fist Way and everything. I know I see
that's the thing with Foot Fist Way. Like the thing I didn't like about this movie, it didn't bother me, but it wasn't the best part with Seth Rogen. I wish Danny McBride, you know, but he doesn't have the star power. I wish he would have starred in this film.
Yeah, I see. That's what we were talking about this last night. I think I just like Danny McBride more than Seth Rogen.
Oh, just like,
you know, I like him more. Yeah. Like, and because I like Eastbound and Down more, and it's a similar kind of comedy. Which,
yeah,
you know,
and Danny McBride has a cameo in this film, and
it's hysterical.
I liked that scene too,
and he wasn't in it for that long. had he been Ronnie Barnhart, I probably would have liked this movie more, just because, I don't know, it would have probably made the ridiculousness of it more so than I felt like was there, and maybe that's why I was turned off by over half of the movie. You know what I mean?
Okay, so let's talk about spoilers. Okay, if you haven't seen this film, you can probably just stop listening. Turn it off. But okay, so as we get into spoilers, there's a point in this film. Now, tell me if you agree. Where, when this scene happens, you're either going to say like what is going on, like there's no way, like I'm not gonna, this isn't realistic, like I don't like what's going on, or B, you're gonna, you know, buy it and kind of run with the rest of the film. And the scene for me, it wasn't the montage. There's a montage in it where he, you know, decides to just fuck everything and kind of just, you know, go crazy with, you know, his
Michael
fellow security,
Pena,
Michael Pena.
who plays his like sidekick.
Yeah. And the scene for me was the scene after that with the cop cars when they all came, and there was like 50 police officers.
Yeah, he like beat he like beats the
Beats
shit
up.
out of like 30 of them, and then he gets out of jail like a day later.
No, that was, oh, he gets out of jail, but he, I assume
Right.
it's on house arrest, because they do a flash, they do a,
Yeah, but I mean, he would have gone to jail for the rest of his whole life.
so while I was watching that point, there was, I was going through my mind, I was like, oh no, like, this isn't good, like, I don't think I'm gonna like this, and then, like, as I saw what was happening, like, I kind of realized, okay, it's just gonna have this unrealistic tone for the rest of the film, and then from that on, you know, I didn't care, like, what was gonna happen, I knew it was gonna go crazy. And I feel like that's going to be the turning point for most people, don't you? Because the whole film up till that point is kind of plays it kind of safe, don't you think? Or play not. That's what I thought.
I don't know. I mean, it's. I mean, is the movie ever realistic? I guess it
Yeah,
is.
I would
I
say the
mean, it. I
beginning.
guess it's kind of realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a hype. It's like, but it's really hyper realistic. Like it like. I
Well,
guess
they
it's
just
like
go to the extreme with
it
everything.
like glorifies the worst part of the worst habits of Americans. So as to like expose them, you know, that's kind of like the point of the movie. I feel like it's glorifying the seedy part of America with its McDonald's and its, you know, and its, you know, love of gun control and all this shit, and or love of owning guns rather, and you know, it kind of just exposes the dirtiness of it all. But I don't think it's worth it, you know. So I don't know. I don't think it's ever really too realistic, to be
Well,
completely
I don't
honest.
know. When I was watching it,
But
that
you're
was
right.
the
But you're right. I
point. That
mean,
was
it
the point.
gets it like it takes a huge leap into
Yeah,
totally
that's no.
Pineapple Express unrealistic violent territory. Yeah, right at that scene. And like I thought towards the end, I kind of just gave into it, is kind of how I would say. And I did laugh. At like the last 15 minutes, I thought were just
You want to
so
talk about some parts we
ridiculous.
love, or parts
Yeah.
I love? All right.
All right, go ahead.
There's there's a montage that I was talking about before with Michael Pena, and they it's kind of they do, you know, they smoke weed, they get drunk, and then it kind of escalates. They do coke, or they do coke actually first, but they and then at the and then they start shooting heroin, and then the next scene is them, you know, leaving the mall, or they're walking around the mall, and Seth Rogen says, "Man, I was really sad this morning. Thanks for cheering me up." And I didn't realize that this whole montage took place within the span of like
One
less,
day.
yeah, even less like than a day.
Right.
And
Yeah. And
that was one of my favorite
that's
parts.
funny, but like it was kind of ironic about that is like how many times has that been done before? The montage that takes place in one day. Like have you seen any, you know,
Yeah,
like any of
but
the Naked Gun movies where it's like, you know what I mean? I just think like that I laughed at that scene. I definitely did.
It was
But
more the part, it's not like the
no,
montage of, it's not
I
the point that
know.
took place, it's the, like what they did,
No,
like the
I no, you're
extremes that they went
right. I
to.
know, but I'm still like the gimmick of the whole like one day montage where it probably would have taken a week or something is like I thought that was kind of ironic. I was trying to be really original, but these that but
Anyways,
clearly you disagree.
yeah, clearly. Then a supporting
Whatever.
character that was hilarious was Aziz Ansari, who was in Scrubs
Oh yeah.
and Parks and Recreation, which premieres on Thursday night. You'll be listening to it late, but watch it. It got a couple good reviews. It's an Office type spin-off series from the not a spin-off of the plot of the Office, but from the writers of the Office about Parks. Anyways,
Starring Amy Poehler.
yeah. So I thought I love him in this movie.
He's
His
funny. He's
delivery
funny. He's
and
very funny in this
like
movie, yeah.
it's just awesome. And then Pan Oswalt, he plays a boss of was it like a cinnamon baking place or
Yeah, it's
something?
like
It
I
was
mean
like
it has a
cinnamon
name that's
bun place.
not any, you know, obviously any consumer name, but
Yeah.
it's like a Cinnabon kind of a place.
Yeah, and so and there's a scene in there where he goes on like a minute rant to the cashier who kind of he, she really likes Seth Rogen, and if you're listening this far, you know what happens at the end, And he goes on a minute rant. She has her leg is held up because of a protein deficiency. And he goes on a minute rant of about how she's not cleaning the her area properly, but she can't reach it. And so there's
like one, making fun of her being a cripple.
Yeah. So if you don't laugh at that, you know.
I mean, that was funny. Patton Oswalt's funny. Yeah. So,
And then Seth Rogen continues to just beat the living shit out of him, which, you know.
Yeah, there's a really funny scene where he does that. So.
And
like I'm saying, you know, they're funny scenes. So I'm like. You know, there are very funny scenes, but they just don't make up for the other scenes.
True. I don't know. Another scene I liked was Seth Rogen goes to Ray Liotta's office, and he's, you know, wondering if he passed. Because there's a subplot of getting into the police academy.
Oh, my God.
And they're wondering if he passed the police academy test. And Ray Liotta's co-worker hides in the closet because he thinks it's going to be an hilarious conversation, and so they start talking, and in the middle of the conversation this co-worker just busts out of the door and is like, this is actually really sad, I thought it was gonna be funnier, and he just leaves.
That's what I mean, like, punchline. It was like it's a really funny punchline, but it's also like one of the saddest things I've seen in a movie in a year.
Yeah, but that you don't laugh at that? Like
I laughed at when he came out, kind of. But like,
and dude, there's a scene with his mother when she gets drunk, passed out on the ground from drinking too much, and he just puts a blanket over her and lets her and just And just lets her go to sleep like a good son. It's just so fucking depressing and just so sad.
I know,
it's
horrible.
So funny.
It's horrible. I hope that people don't exist.
I know.
I pray that people like that don't exist. And that is what I was left with thinking about in this movie. So
I don't understand though how you can say it's not worth watching. Like I don't know. Like, obviously I wouldn't recommend it to like my mom or like my girlfriend, even like she wouldn't like that. But like,
here's my question: who's this movie made for?
Our people our age who are sadistic. No, never.
So for people like what? Like,
I don't think we'll make a lot of money, but I'm just happy, you know, it got made. And
I'm happy it got made too. Like, I love the fact that a movie like this got made, if only because of go see it and you'll know what I'm talking about. Like, it's impressive. I just wish I liked it more. I wish that I laughed more. I wish that I wasn't like, I did this. Ugh. Ugh. I made that sound more than I went. That's how you laugh. No, that is what I did. That's just what it comes down to. You know, I think I gave it a C+. That's not a horrible rating. It just says, hey, good try. You hit the ball out of the park a couple times, yeah. But as a whole, it's like it's an uneven, depressing mess.
Yeah, I was gonna give it around 7.5, but I would bump it up to 8.5 after. And I do want to see it again. I'm not trying to battle you out. Like I know people won't like it. Like I know, like
No. I think it's gonna be exactly the way it is between me and you with pretty much everyone. And I don't know. Like you said, I don't know if it won't make a lot of money. I think it'll make.
It's either gonna like catch on and like people are gonna be like, you have to see this movie, and like.
I think it'll find its niche and make a nice little sum of money, and then a lot of people will buy the DVD.
Yeah.
So I think that it'll end up being an ultimate success, actually. Yeah. But we'll see. I'm excited to see how it turns out.
Yeah.
Well, how did you feel about the ending?
I was just gonna say that. Yeah. So the ending scene. I mean, if you're already listening, obviously I've seen it. And the ending. You know, the Flasher comes back, and what follows is like a 2 to 3 minute chase, full frontal nudity, full and back nudity, as you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was there, yeah.
And where Seth Rogen, you know, kind of to redeem himself, he catches catches the Flasher by putting a bullet through his heart. And
oh my God.
And it was fucking awesome, I have to say. Well, Dave, didn't you like what
best,
did you think of
okay,
that scene?
Okay. Well, the thing about that was that
Think about you, like, oh my God, okay, sorry. Go ahead.
The thing about that scene was that when I was watching it and he's chasing the Flasher, and I don't know why after, you know, 75 minutes of the film, I didn't like expect it.
Yeah.
But when I was watching it, I was like, oh, he's gonna like take a shortcut and he's gonna tackle.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought too.
And then he's running at Anna Faris. And all of a sudden, Seth Rogen just steps up. And, like, he doesn't tackle him. He just steps up next to Anna Faris. And I'm like, oh. And then he pulls out a gun. And I'm like, of course. Of course he would pull out a gun and blow the guy away. And the one thing I did find odd about that ridiculous end, which I did laugh at clearly, so there you go, was that...
Sounds like you laughed a lot more than you thought,
Dan.
That,
yeah. Was that... He didn't. The streaker didn't die.
No.
I was
and then he continues to pick him up and carry him and then bring him to his golf cart and drives him to the police station.
Don't you think that was a weird part? Like, I think that the movie would have been better, like, had the guy just been blown away and, like, he'd been dead. Like, I don't know. I was surprised that, like, they kept him alive.
What do you think of when the guy, his manager, gives him, throws him the keys?
Oh, man, I was like so pissed off.
It's just so, see, that's like that shit. Like, you're not, I'm not going to see him. Like, the next time I see this in a movie is the next Jodie Hill movie. Like, that's why I liked it so much. I don't know.
Right. I mean, that's a good point. No, and that's what I mean. Like, you know, hopefully there will be a next Jodie Hill movie. Yeah. You know, like, because, you know, it's.
We got to argue about something.
Yeah, that's exactly. Very true. That's very true. Yeah, no, I mean, it's its own brand of comedy. There's nothing like it. I wouldn't call it the most original thing in the world, but it's definitely got its own kind of voice. And yes, after a man blows another man who's naked away, and then his boss proceeds to throw him the keys to his old job back after everything that he's done in that movie, you will not see that in any other movie but a Jodie Hill movie. That's true. That's very true. That's a very good point. So kudos to Jodie Hill for finding his own niche. I just wish I liked that niche more, but who knows? Yeah. Maybe I'll see it again and maybe I'll like it more. But right now, as of now, I thought it was a disappointment. But I did love and laugh very hard when he pulled out the gun and shot him.
Yeah.
So,
right. So
I didn't, you know, but on a quick side note, I didn't really like Ray Liotta in it.
Yeah. There was one scene where I liked when he yells at him, but that's
just... even that scene. I was like, okay,
it's ridiculous.
It was just kind of, no, I mean, yeah, ridiculous or not. He's almost like, Ray Liotta's almost like outdone Ray Liotta.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of like, all right, dude. Like,
yeah, no, I agree.
Just string him up. I don't know. Yeah. But aside from that, I mean, and actually, a good point someone brought up. Anna Faris, not really necessary, kind of. Her whole thing.
Yeah.
It didn't really fit in this movie. You know what I mean?
I agree, like,
you know,
we were like talking
her,
about.
Her whole house bunny, just friends, kind of stupid, dumb, blonde comedy.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that. Yeah.
Which is funny. In Spells, it's funny. It didn't really feel like it needed to be in the film, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I wish they picked a different actress.
It would have almost had been funnier had she just been normal. Yeah.
They had a normal girl.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Maybe can just combine those two girls. Like, have her be, like, slutty.
Yeah, but they had to play off each other. That's
like a slutty normal girl. You know what I mean? As opposed to, like, a dumb slutty girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
At the end when he just says, you know, fuck you, like, and kind of just, like...
Is that funny, though? I didn't think that was that funny. Fuck
like
you.
That.
And when he said,
he's like, if you want a girl that will
fuck you
and then
the
fuck your enemy, then fuck your enemy, then this is the girl that will do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Like, right. It's funny. I mean,
yeah.
But no, you're right. It could have been handled a lot better, I think.
Yeah,
they did need two. I think they needed two female characters to play against each other.
Yeah, I guess. I really don't feel like they needed to, but I mean, like, right. And I Anna Faris is funny.
I mean, the movie was short itself. It was kind of, you know,
it's 85 minutes, that's what I mean.
Closing thoughts. I mean, I would definitely recommend going seeing it, and I enjoyed it.
Go see it if you. Yeah, and my closing thoughts would be go see it if you like laughing at mean things. I don't mean that like in a... I mean, seriously, if you think that...
I would recommend people watching a couple episodes of Eastbound and Down.
You would?
Would.
Yeah, I would. That's what I...
Yeah. And if you don't like Kenny Powers' character at all...
If you don't like Eastbound and Down, you shouldn't go see the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, just because that's what this is, except it's far more extreme.
Yeah.
I'm not recommending it. I just think that most people won't like it, but...
I agree with you that most people won't like it, but I think it's worth seeing.
All right.
All right. So that concludes our review of Eastbound and Down. Observer Report. Side note, Eastbound and Down got renewed for second season. Production later this year to air in 2010.
Nice.
So that's awesome. All right, so do we want to talk about movies coming out this week? It's pretty, pretty shitty.
Well, Observer Report and then what?
Dragon Ball Evolution.
Which I wrote about a little bit in my Eurocentrism article.
And I would stay far away. Hannah Montana, the movie.
So I guess if you really need to go to the movies, you have to go see Observer Report because I don't really have the heart to recommend either of those. But
if I don't know where you guys live, but if Sin Nombre or Sugar are playing in your area, definitely go check those out. I actually listened to a /film interview today with Kei Fukunaga, the director of Sin Nombre, and it was really, really good. I would recommend anyone listen to it.
Cool.
Yeah. The movie looks absolutely fantastic, I think, and I really can't wait to see it. Unfortunately, it doesn't come around here until I think the 24th. So, check out both those movies. And go see Fast and Furious again. Get it back to 72.5 million.
Yeah, let's get that movie. Dark Knight.
That
numbers.
Movie needs to make at least $500 million before I'm going to see it.
Definitely. Four Fast, Four Furious.
No. All right. Thank you guys for listening. This has been our fourth episode. You can always follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And you can always follow me at twitter.com/DJMECCA.
Yep. As of last week, you can now subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. It's easy.
Go ahead and do that. It's $3.99.
It's so free. It's like ridiculous how free it is. You just click the button and it will automatically download for you.
Literally, you could do it with a blindfold.
You can even have it so you just pull your iPod in. Let it go for a little bit, and we'll automatically even transfer the podcast over. So you don't even have to do anything.
Shit.
All you have to do is press the button.
Oh, my God. That's so convenient and easy. You should just do it anyway just to practice.
Yeah, and rate the podcast. I mean, even if you hate it.
Five or zero.
If you can. Or five. Or five.
Maybe do a five.
Yeah, do a five. Next week, I can't see us really reviewing Hannah Montana or Dragon Ball.
No, I think next week we have on our plates, I believe, 17 Against coming out.
Yeah, I don't know if we got a press.
An opportunity to see that. Yeah. So that's a possibility. That is a Zac Efron movie. So everyone should listen to that podcast.
Actually, if we get, if we see Crank.
Right. Really. And anyway, Crank 2 is coming out next week, so we'll probably be talking about that a little bit because... Super pumped to see the sequel to one of the best movies ever made, obviously. So, and Statham.
Yeah,
simple as that.
Statham. So, all right, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Have a good night.
Yep. Good night.